Hey, lovely listeners. Welcome to Attotat. Today, we're exploring the Taylor Swift effect. More than melodies, it's a $330 million boost to icons like the NFL. Ready for magic? And no more than you did yesterday.
Welcome to the Attotat Show, where marketing, media, and ad tech merge. Stay tuned as your host, Pesach Latin, navigates you through the evolving landscape of marketing trends and advertising innovations.
Everyone, we're joined by a dynamic group of individuals who are shaping the world of media marketing advertising. First, we have Ralph Sutton, the charismatic host of the DR Show and the co-founder and owner of Gas Digital, a name synonymous with influential podcasting. And then we have Alyssa Myers, the insightful reporter at Marketing Brew, well-versed in the latest marketing trends with a key focus on sports and audio podcast advertising, and I'm told an expert on Taylor Swift. And I think we have coming, although I don't see her yet, Michelle Harmon Madsen, who is the Chief Marketing Officer at Sponsor United, who brings her expertise from the sports and entertainment intelligence platform. Hopefully, we'll also have Lou Pascalis, the seasoned veteran at Ed Fontes Media, although he did say he might not make it today. I'm excited to dive into the stories and insights from these industry leaders, and welcome to the show. First of all, I think everyone wants to talk about the Super Bowl. I don't know what happened to Michelle. I think she dropped
out. Also, by the way, not to interrupt, but Lou responded to your email and said he's not coming. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh,
on
that's
that.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's always fun. Lou is a cornucopia of insight, and I think we have Michelle back. Anyways, dissecting Swift's Super Bowl marketing playbook. So Taylor Swift's appearance with Travis Kelce, is that how you pronounce it, Kelce?
I believe
so. You can tell that I am definitely a sports fan.
Sorry to interrupt again. It is the SDR show, not DR show, but just
oh, I'll I'm shut sorry. Up. The FDR
that's
as in...
SS as in sex, drugs, and rock and roll is what it stands for. SDR.
Oh, SDR.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that's DR right. Is in like direct response or something.
Oh. No worries.
But first I thought it was like the doctor show, so I figured that wasn't
the
case.
Or the Dominican Republic show, maybe.
Maybe. Taylor Swift turned the Super Bowl into her own marketing playground with Travis Kelce. What's the playbook here? And why was it a slam dunk for the NFL and the advertisers?
Who are you pitching that
to? Ralph, you want
to
go first?
I mean, for me, look, I think it's fascinating because we've gone full circle from when it used to start years ago. When I was a kid, it was all about celebrity endorsements and about in-show advertising as opposed to 30-second spots outside of the show. It's gone back to how it all started. So to me, it makes total sense. I don't know why people are so astonished by it. It just is what the world is cyclical. Things go back to how they used to be. When I was a kid, it was all about what Johnny Carson was holding up and talking about. That's what we're doing now. We're getting rid of the 30-second spot. We're going back to in-show advertising, and that's what this is. Just another form of that.
I think it's interesting to even frame it up as a playbook. You know, it's you can argue all you want about the nature of their relationship, if it's real or not, but it's one of those things that, you know, there's also probably debate to be had about how intentional any of it is. A marketing playbook, this woman just showing up to the Super Bowl to support, you know, her significant other, obviously with huge results for the NFL, for brands. But yeah, it's an interesting framing.
Do you think, Alyssa, that it is a marketing ploy or that they actually love each other?
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I think that it's real and they actually love each other.
I think it's real too. But... it's so stupid. Yeah. Of course it's real.
It's been
it doesn't
going
matter
on too
if it's
long
real.
At this point.
Does it really matter from a marketing perspective if it's real? Because honestly, Taylor Swift is a product. She is the product. And so no matter what she does, she's making news. She's creating more products. And this
but do you not think, sir,
relationship.
That if it's not real, her authenticity as potential artist and going forward is out the window? If there's an email that's leaked that shows that it was all a marketing play, that her viability of being a genuine artist is not out the window and her likability and her advertising value goes in the pooper?
Well, of course. I think her
I don't even think
oh,
it's
Michelle,
a question.
We got Michelle, sorry.
I'm here, you all. I apologize. I don't know why my camera decides not to work. But anyway, I'm going to jump in here because I think it's kind of a ridiculous question if it's not real. Like, listen, I think this is the most genuine thing I've seen in a while. And it actually seems kind of happy, which is such a nice change for things that are happening in the world. But it also seems, you know, as I kind of said, genuine. Like, even when you see them, whether, you know, listen, the coverage is a little bit over the top. That's what I think can be a little, you know, non-genuine, if you will. But I think what they're doing is fun. I mean, if you would have been Gisele Bündchen and Tom Brady, you would have seen them on the camera the same kind of way.
I forgot about those two. That's true. Yeah.
When they broke up, I remember on Facebook, everyone was as if they had a chance with Gisele.
I I think everybody has a chance with everybody personally, but that's just my outlook on life.
Swiss brand value.
Some more than others, right?
Her value was supposed to be around $331 million. Is this a future of celebrity endorsements, or is this just something that Taylor Swift could pull off?
I think it's pretty rare. I mean, to hold Taylor Swift up as the whole future of celebrity endorsements, I think would be a big statement. I think there's a lot that's unique about her. She obviously had one of the biggest followings before the NFL, before Travis Kelce, before all this with the Super Bowl. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's never to be seen again. But I think that this is a pretty rare occasion where you have two properties, I guess, as big as they are with Taylor Swift, with the NFL. To kind of naturally come together once, maybe twice in a lifetime, I'd say.
I noticed you did bring up Travis. Is he not one of these? Is he not important to the conversation?
You know, he certainly had a lot of acclaim before he started dating Taylor. I think he was fairly well known, you know, like a great player, marketing value. I think he had already had some brand deals under his belt. But I would say that she probably raised not even his star value, but even his, you know, power and sway and interest among brands a little bit more than he raised hers.
And also what I think is important, unlike, let's take another celebrity couple that imploded within the last 5 years, Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande, right? She is arguably almost as big as him, but he was laden with controversy and negativity where neither of these, to my knowledge, of these people have any sort of bad weather in their background. Nothing weird ever happened with them where they were chastised by the media. So other than people thinking this is pre-planned, which would have been a 20-year planning, which is pretty amazing. But, you know, they're so likable. He was so good on SNL. She has never done anything that has upset her fans, really. So this is a golden ticket that will never happen again with two, you know, seemingly perfect people. It's just not going to happen again. No way.
So what were the hits or misses of brands that actually jumped on the Swift bandwagon? Anybody?
Fortunately, a lot of hits, I think. I think that brands were pretty careful, and it was also pretty easy to make the call as, like, this is probably something that you want to be really careful with. You don't want to poke fun at it. You know, you don't want to get the Swifties upset. You don't want to get NFL super fans upset. And I think that brands really took that to heart. I can't think of any, you know, huge missteps, maybe some campaigns that didn't get as much traction as others. But I can certainly think of, you know, plenty of,
you know, and I actually would even say that I think the brands that actually did it well, even the ones outside of the typical sponsorship, the Heinz, when they did the seemingly ranch,
right.
You know, I should say that the ketchup and that, like, people had fun with them. And so it was a little tongue in cheek. And so I actually think there was to Alyssa's point of view, a lot of them that actually did pretty well and kind of built on pop culture to make it be natural integration. It's like, all right, some of them I didn't think were personally, you know, awesome, but they did a pretty good job.
Which
overall.
One did you like the least, Michelle, that you thought didn't do a good job?
Well, I mean, when I was looking at the ketchup ones, I will tell you, like, Arby's kind of went in and tried to do something. And I thought, that wasn't, you know, quite on the mark, but it was fine. Like, they were doing their thing. But I would say, you know, the ones where or Primal Kitchen, maybe it was hard to say organic, you know, in your Primal Kitchen makes sense. But to me, that the Heinz ketchup and when they did it, like, it made a ton of sense and was kind of fun.
Well, obviously, authenticity is the key here. And obviously, it's different. I was thinking about when Elmo wrote on Twitter, or X, whatever we call it nowadays, was it last week or the week before? He asked people how they were doing. And, you know, most people responded, but every single brand had a cringeworthy response based on their brand. And I someone had actually put them up. I wish I had it, had thought about this. And they just, they were not on mark. They were so inauthentic. I mean, I think like Taco Bell is like, we're doing really crunchy or something. It was none of it felt very authentic. I'll send it to you guys. And it's interesting. My next question was actually, if was this the death knell of old school advertising? But Ralph already brought this up, that this is really old school advertising.
Yeah, that's what this is to me. I'm older than everyone here, I imagine. So I remember all that stuff back in the day, and it seems more genuine when it's someone you know or someone you associate with. That's why, by the way, you and I were talking off air about podcasting. The reason why the ROI on podcasting is so high is because people trust the person they're listening to. That auditory connection with the person elevates the brand, and that's all that's happening here. Those Swifties, even though I hate that word, they value her as someone they can authentically trust. That's why I said at the top of the show, if this comes out, which I don't believe it's fake, that it was fake, her authenticity is out the window, her brand is out the window.
Yeah, I thought Swifties were the people who torpedoed John Kerry's presidential election. Weren't they Swifties?
That I don't know.
I think it was
a Taylor Swiftie, that's for sure.
It was a Swift boat. He was a Swift boat veteran. I am older than everyone here.
No, I think I am.
I'm not giving my age. I'll keep my young appeal. Speaking of appeal, the cross demographic appeal, her ability to connect with a wide ranging demographics, showcased the power of universal themes and authentic storytelling. Hey, what can brands learn from this?
You know, it made me think of, properties like An American Idol that used to reach generations. And it's interesting how she's really done a good job where initially when she started off, I would say, gosh, she did reach that, you know, teen 20 kind of audience, but she is absolutely now expanded. And matter of fact, it's kind of funny when you anecdotally talk to moms and dads of people who are taking their kids to these shows, what they end up saying is, I love the show and I'm a Swiftie now. So I think she has absolutely made converts of much more than maybe her original target audience would be. So she's done a great job doing
that. Well, what's also funny to me,
the boomers? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. What's also funny to me is that when with relation to the Super Bowl, since Michael Jackson, which was the first big Super Bowl performance, before that it was like, you know, local bands and, you know, marching bands, stuff like that. There are probably, I don't know, 40% of the audience when they do the metrics at the end that are just tuning in for the Super Bowl that don't give a crap about Super Bowl, but they want to see Prince or they want to see Usher. So this is all that is she's bringing in an audience that maybe starts out inauthentically because they just care about Taylor Swift, or they just cared about Usher or whoever, but then they end up staying and watching a little bit of the game. Maybe they turn into a fan. That's the whole purpose of it anyway. So to me, it's very authentic. It's not inauthentic. It's what's been going on for 25 years.
I think that her collaboration is less about endorsements, more about partnerships. How does this shift the narrative for brands who want to have celebrity endorsements? And I think it's also interesting, and it just hit me, we're coming into the realm of AI, and I think you may have noticed that my intro was a Taylor Swift AI that was not actually Taylor Swift. I know you're surprised. but do you think that's going to change it also? I mean, if we can't even trust, and you mentioned about the voice being the key to authenticity, now we can't even trust someone's voice. Does that mean the partnerships will change into a different quagmire?
Maybe. I think that she's fairly good on that front. You know, she is particularly choosy about the brands that she chooses to partner with. And maybe this is something even you can speak to, Michelle. I know you guys have done some research on this at Sponsor United. But I think just that's one way that celebrity endorsers can maintain a little bit of authenticity when they are, you know, shelling for brands, speaking for brands, is to kind of follow the Taylor Swift model a little bit if they can, and not just say yes to every endorsement deal that crosses their desk.
I mean, she's really the opposite of most artists right now. She's got one deal. I don't even know if it's still going with Capital One, mm-hmm. has been her tour sponsor, if you will. And unlike you know, artists across the board and influencers in beauty and health and fitness and you name, you know, the actors and actresses, she really has limited it to one particular thing. She certainly has a huge potential to go out to a variety of different products to say, listen, I want to partner with you. And I think everyone would jump at it, but she's taken the other approach. You know, she's doing what she wants to do and when she wants to do it. And it is working.
I mean, she did that with the movie. She broke the entire mold of how movies are released. So good for her, you know, but how many people are in that world? There's not enough people that can elect to just work with the brands they want to work with only and keep their authenticity. She's the first music billionaire, right? That's wild too. So she can make these decisions that other people can't or don't have the ability to make. And on the AI front, which is funny, is I think all it's going to do is very soon is launch an entire new form of business where people's only job is to decide if it's real or AI. That will be a business for sure within the next few years.
Yeah, we discussed this a couple times in the show, and I think a lot of people said it won't be necessarily find out what's fake. It will be knowing what's real, meaning you'll assume everything was fake, and the things that are real will be watermarked, or they'll have some sort of hash, or you name it.
Anything that can be faked. You know what I mean? I'm wondering when the first person is going to get away with saying, hey, that wasn't me, it was AI, and it really was them, but they were able to play it off that it was AI. That's going to happen too, which will be cool.
Well, not to bring Donald Trump into it, didn't he just claim recently that a photo of him was of him looking slightly obese was
AI.
Not him, but it was AI. Yeah. It was actually a photo from like 6 years before.
That's cool. Love it. Love it all.
I'd like to use one from 6 years ago too. But listen, we're going to come across some ethical issues. That's for sure coming up here with AI. And, you know, I really, you hope that people will use it smartly, but you know that you're going to have those outliers who are not.
I mean, outliers. I think everyone in the beginning is going to try and have what just happened here. Let me have Taylor Swift do my intro because I can. That's going to happen. So I think that, you know, maybe not malicious intent, but certainly not, you know, fortuitous or a high, you know, high branding thinking an intent.
You're right, Ralph.
One of the things I noticed that all her fans feel like they're her best friend, like they're insiders. How can brands use that idea moving forward?
She's one of those people I think that has used social media very wisely. I think that's, you know, one way that's a fairly obvious thing that brands can do to connect with their consumers that they are already doing. I also think a lot of this has to do with what she has to offer. You know, people are rabid for her music. So when she is releasing new songs, a new album on social comes to mind in particular. I think that's just inherently a little bit different than some brands. You know, like not every product, not every launch you're doing is gonna, you know, generate that level of interest from your consumers. And it can't, but maybe, you know, brands thinking a little bit more along those lines of like, is what I'm talking about, is my product going to have this level of fandom? Is it worthy of that? Sort of like a huge artist like Taylor can generate, could be something to keep in mind, not even strive for, but maybe duplicate at a smaller scale.
And I think that most people, fortunately or unfortunately, I think fortunately for Taylor, don't realize that she's a brand. They look at her as a person. Well, it's very different when you're like, you brought up Taco Bell, you know, they know it's a brand versus when Taylor Swift is tweeting or Xing or whatever you want to call it. I'll use a really crappy example, but it's the one that came to mind. I had the writers of Family Guy and South Park on my show not that long ago. We were talking about how they have been somehow able to escape any sort of negativity with racy or cancelable content, for the lack of better words. And the reason they said it was, well, it's a cartoon. People don't associate the face of the voice. They just think it's a cartoon, so they let it slide. Whereas if it was a sitcom doing the same exact words, they would have a problem with it. So in this respect, it's people don't look at Taylor as a brand. They think they're talking to Taylor. She does it better than any most celebrities that do it that come off like brands. Even comedians that I follow on social media, I read their tweets sometimes like, oh man, I know he didn't write that. That just feels so like not like it's him. And it feels cringy, as you would say earlier. So it's just that she does that better than anybody. The authentic voice and hiding that it's a brand and people think it's a person.
Isn't that why people do celebrity endorsements, to make it more personal?
Sure, but I don't know if they pull it off as authentically as she does. That's the difference, where it comes off like, oh, like when you see your favorite comedian in a Ford commercial or in a, I don't know, like what's his name, does it all the time. Kevin Hart is in a billion commercials. After the 10th one that he's on, you're like, oh, he doesn't give a crap about whatever that is that he's using. He's just taking the check.
Well, you know what I love that she does that I think other brands can pick up on is she, to her avid fans, and even if you're a Doritos or something, and not, it doesn't work for everyone, but you could see it apply, but she gives them clues and kind of teases them on what's coming out. And so she's done a terrific job on that in earlier albums, like kind of, you know, kind of letting who's in the know that something's coming. Of course, you could say the Grammys when she announced it, you know, look for April 19th, I think it was the date. That was more obvious. But you can see to your avid fans telling them that kind of stuff or cluing them in when things are coming down. But to Lissa's point, it doesn't always work for every brand because they just don't have the same kind of clout or their product doesn't have the same kind of resonance with the audience.
You know, what's funny is that I used to do rock radio. And back then in the early 2000s, all these bands, and I was quoted on Newsweek hilariously also about Taylor Swift, because this is when she had to re-record her records. She was so open about why she was doing it, whereas in the bands I would deal with, which are like 80s rock bands like Def Leppard and, you know, all these Guns N' Roses, they had to re-record their records to get back ownership, just like she did. But they just made it like they wanted to do a new take on the record, which was not the case. They never were authentic about it. She was honest about it, and I think that's why it worked, whereas they hit it. So she's been great with stuff like that as well.
So I think it's interesting. Again, nobody has really talked about Travis Kelce yet. We keep on avoiding that for some reason. But what can we learn about their relationship and the dynamic when it comes to brand, to driving brand perception? Is romance or personal lives, is that what people want to see in the world of TikTok?
I think Travis has done a fantastic job. You know, let's step back before even relationship with Taylor. You know, he's got this podcast which has a life of its own. And if you're a football fan, you're paying attention to it. I mean, it's really pretty great. And he actually, I can't remember the number of endorsements he actually already has, but has a tremendous amount and has really engaged with those brands. I mean, he spent a lot of time really leaning into doing the ads that were out this season. All this stuff happened way before the relationship. I really give him kudos for taking advantage of, like, listen, I'm going to maximize what I'm doing and I'm going to have fun. And they all seemed real. So I think he is a star player. I mean, he's been huge in the NFL, but as a personality, he probably goes a little unnoticed. He's, you know, a little overshadowed by Taylor, but I think he's been a huge power for all the brands that have endorsed him.
And his likability is through the roof. I mean, I don't know much about sports in general. I don't really follow any sports at all, but, when I saw use SNL again, I didn't really know him. I was like, wow, this is usually the sports figures that go on SNL stink. And he was great. He was so likable and you rooted for him. So I, knowing very little about him, I'm rooting for this to work. I want this to be the one that works for them, you know? So I think most people, unless you're one of these conspiracy theorists, you want this to work.
Do you think
he's got that authenticity too? Sorry.
Right. Just in terms of, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to hit on, you know, we talked about Taylor's authenticity, and I think that's something that he has as well. In addition to likability, he's really being himself, kind of goofy. And to Michelle's point on the podcast, his brother Jason, who hosts with him, has a similar thing. I think they're both, you know, pretty real, talk about their families, and that's something I think that a lot of people get on board with.
So you're saying, like, Ted Nugent would not have had the same effect as Travis Kelce?
Probably
anybody
not.
They're not polarizing. That's the thing that's funny about them is, in someone who works in the podcast space, you're told often that you want to polarize, you want to say things that are going to incite a reaction, right? That's because if everyone's just agreeing with everyone, who wants to listen to that, right? But they are the antithesis of that. They don't really have missteps. They're just likable people, yet it's working. So it's funny how you can argue both sides of that coin. I mean, there are people who purposefully tag their podcast with clickbait to get people angry. But this is the opposite of that, and it's working. So it gives me hope for humanity, to be honest with you.
Taylor Swift gives you hope for humanity. Yep. That's a great quote.
There you go. Take it out of context and make some sort of clickbait out of it. Go for it.
I forgot my question completely. I'm so glad that Riverside takes out all the pauses. You can make it do that automatically. It makes me seem like infinitely smarter. I forgot where I was. We were talking about Ted Nugent, right?
Yeah. I had him on my podcast once, by the way, which was dicey, but he did shoot a bow and arrow on the show. That was kind of wild. We stayed away from politics.
Oh, yeah, I remember. So I think it's interesting you said that she's not polarizing, but if you believe what's on social media, she's one of the most polarizing people out there. Some people are claiming now that she is married to Satan. I mean, what was I reading? This is like a satanic conspiracy to get Biden elected. I mean,
right. So I said, that's what I said. Unless you're a conspiracy girl
She does everything. She runs a show. You know, she has a thing with Kelsey, and she's, you know, doing the apocalypse, it seems.
I will give her credit where you gotta love her song, you know, where she says, you know, haters are gonna hate. And so she's like, I'm focusing on where I'm getting the love versus that. And that's where her energy is, which I think she was really smart because you can get caught up into that. And I think that's with endorsements, partnerships, you can get caught up in that fray. And she's kind of said, I'm gonna rise above and not go there. So I don't think the conspiracy theories make sense at all to me, but maybe it's just where I'm coming from.
I do love the idea that like 18 years ago, somebody took her aside and said, listen, we're going to make you a celebrity because in about 20 years, we're going to need someone to endorse an old candidate. And she's like, all right, I'm for it. I mean, I think that's great insight that happened. That's really cool.
It's kind of inevitable Illuminati. With that level of fame, too. You know, when you get that famous, you're going to have these loud minorities on Twitter or X sharing conspiracy theories about you. And yet, to Michelle's point, she and Travis Kelce, too, have done a pretty good job of kind of ignoring that stuff. Even some of the rabid NFL fans that you hear posting about, oh, they were cutting to Taylor too much on the broadcast. She said it in her Time interview where she was like, you know, if some of the dads and Brads and Chads are getting upset that my face is on their screen too much, like, I don't know. I don't hear it. I think they're both kind of trying to, with success, drown that stuff out.
Is there any negative side to this? Is there any possible blowback?
I would say to the, you know, not, I don't like to call, I hate talking politics, but to the people that do believe that right. She is a plant for Biden, those people maybe, but I think to the unsilent majority, I'm sorry, to the silent majority, I think it's, unless it ends with some crazy conspiracy theory being true, which that would be wild. Right. I don't think so. Cause I think I am an ancillary fan at best, but, I hope it works. What a great story. You know, I really believe, because I don't know, she's dated a lot of people, that this is the first time I think that she's had a true, I'm not talking crass on the show, but a true physical connection. Is I think this is the first time she had that, and this is why she is showing up everywhere, driving, flying 18 hours, because the first time in her life she got, you know, something happened with her that she never had happened before with other lovers. That's all I'm going to say. That's what happened.
It sounds like you would agree too, Ralph, that the potential blowback is in a hopefully not a breakup. Probably yeah. Travis has more to be concerned about there with, you know, some angry people on the internet coming after him in that yeah. case.
Unless she breaks up with him, you know, if he breaks up with her, like it depends on how, if she finds out he cheated on her, that would be bad for him. But if she moves on, then I don't think it's bad for him.
We may have a song about how she hates football. In the next 2 years, you're saying.
That'd be cool. That'd be great. She had no idea what's going on. She's just cheering. That'd be cool.
I'm looking back at her approach. What is the future of brand engagement? Are we moving towards a more personal, less polished era?
Absolutely. So, I think even without her, that's been the trend, you know, lo-fi videos on TikTok and yeah, I'll let everyone else speak. But I think regardless of Taylor Swift before, during, after her era, that is a larger push that we're seeing.
So I mean, coming from, again, from the podcast space, when I try to only talk about products that either me or my co-hosts actually use, when we talk about products that are just an advertiser that we're doing a read for, the ROI is crap. But if it's something that I genuinely use on a regular basis or I believe in, it's so hard to, first of all, I'm a shitty actor. Excuse me, cursing. You could edit that in post. But the ROI is going to be much harder, much higher, because they believe that I believe that I like it. And so they're going to be willing to take a shot. So like, I don't smoke at all, but whenever we do ads for vapes or things like that, and it's not my co-host doing the read because he smokes and it's me doing it, those don't do as well. They just don't. And it is what it is. You know, people, especially in a direct connection with your fan base, they want to believe that it's real. And they've been doing that forever. Now I just think marketing companies are realizing it's true.
You know, you can think when you're speaking of smoke, Snoop Dogg, when he came out with the commercial, and I apologize, I cannot remember the name of the smokeless fire pit that he promoted. Well, it was a fantastic ad.
That, I think that says it all. Yeah. None of us can remember. Well, oh, I do remember. It's Solo Stove.
Thank you. I was going Soloff. I was putting an extra layer. Yes. But
that's the Russian version.
I think Soloff is a drug to go to sleep, isn't it? I don't know.
Just like the commercial.
But you're right. I mean, maybe he overshadowed it, but he did talk about the press that they got in addition to their ad. I don't even know how long it ran for, but again, it was authentic and it was fun, and he made kind of fun of himself, if you will, and the situation. But I think to Alyssa's point, we're going to see more and more of that authenticity, more raw, more people, you know, where it makes sense. So I'm with you.
I don't know if there was a direct correlation, but didn't the CEO get fired like a month later?
I think that the word was that they overspent a little bit on that one. So, yeah, I think you are right.
Also, with all of that, it comes to also, even if he really uses that smokeless fire pit, you don't associate him with that. So I think it also needs to feel branded correctly. And that didn't.
No, I think one person bought it and realized they actually couldn't light a blunt with it. And that was it.
It was probably great for brand awareness, but I think, you know, if they were holding those executives
really?
Up,
because
like,
nobody here
KPIs.
Remembered the name except me. No one here
did,
remembered
yeah,
the
eventually.
Name.
Yeah, and I accidentally got a new subscription to Zoloft.
Right.
No, I mean, that is the trick in doing endorsement deals with anyone is, you know, and you look at the Super Bowl this year, there was a ton of celebrities that were there. And as a brand, you really have to think strategically is, you know, they will be overshadowed. And what's that balance of how you're going to use that star? And then how can you make it continue? Are you doing more with them? And so I think brands really have to think smartly about that because it's, you know, it is a big expense. And how can you make it work for your brand as well?
How does one really create authenticity online in the social media space? Because isn't that what her one of her brands is that she is able to engage with everyone in social media?
I think it's to the point that someone else already raised. I think it was you, Ralph, when you were talking about the fact that she was honest about why she was re-recording her records, which is something that a lot of brands
she was
can't
transparent
or won't
about
do.
It. Transparency is important, yeah. I guess.
She tells the truth and people value that. And I think that's definitely, you know, a lesson that some brands could take to their approach to social media.
But again, I think it boils back to what I was saying earlier is a brand doing it or a person doing it. And I think people make that distinction very clearly, even though I think in America, we look at corporations as people, but it is, you know, from a branding perspective.
They legally are now.
Yeah, they are legally, right? But they
have feelings and political viewpoints now.
Yeah, and it's pretty wild, the world we live in.
Thank you, Citizens United. Going back to politics. So I think it's interesting, in the era of community notes, I think authenticity is very important because as soon as you say something that's inauthentic and someone can call you out on it, it goes viral, especially now on X where even ads now have community notes. I've noticed that several ads have had a product and people have added community notes to say this product doesn't actually do what it says or these screenshots for this video game aren't real. And I've noticed that on X a lot. I guess in this era, brands are going to have to be more aware of this authenticity and transparency. What can we learn to anticipate and deliver beyond expectations, though?
For me, I would say this, and again, I'm just going to keep folding it back to the podcast space, is if you don't lie and you be honest from the get-go, you never have to think about how you're going to be perceived in media. So as long as you're keeping it, it's not such a hacky term, I'm sorry, keeping it real, then it's not going to be an issue. And that's, I think, the problem is these, like, I remember also with video games, they would put very little on the bottom, not in gameplay. And no one would see it, but it just was that legally they got off the hook. And that is the problem nowadays with the 24/7 connection to everybody. It becomes far more quickly aware when you are not being authentic and not being.
But isn't marketing about hyperbole? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? That we're the best product. You have the best podcast in the world. Isn't that what
we
tell people?
That, but I think that might have to dial down. Just like even in now, where I'm not. You know what? I was going to make a point, but I'm not going to make it because we would bring it up politics again. So I'm not going to do it. But I do think that's going to be turned down too. The getting away with things during campaign speeches may change in the future. You may not be able to just say it was a political puffery, or you may not be able to say it's just for the purpose of an ad puffery. I think it may change very soon.
I think too, a lot of marketing these days is not about just saying, you know, we're the best product. And to bring it back to the sports space a little bit, and to Travis and Taylor in the NFL, I mean, some of those activations, I think part of the authenticity for brands has to do with moving pretty quick. Like, you can't account for everything. You can't anticipate everything. And in those situations where, you know, maybe you want to do some marketing that's a little less blatant, not we're the best brand ever, you have to be prepared to do something really fast. Like State Farm's thing with Jason Kelsey and their mom, and Jake from State Farm kind of comes to mind. Like, they got him at an Eagles game, I believe, 24, 48 hours after the first time that Taylor showed up at a Chiefs game. It was quick. It made sense because, you know, their brand mascot, Jake, he is sort of known for going to those sporting events. He goes to NBA All-Star weekend. So it made sense. And I feel like maybe they had to be a little more lenient with some of their legal rules, or they just like moved really quick. They made it happen. And I think that helps with authenticity, is when you're not
trying to plan something. How Ryan Reynolds has been able to turn things around immediately with the Peloton thing. And, you know, that's unbelievable. And only someone quick thinking and willing to bend rules to make it a turnaround. What was that? A 48 hour turnaround with that spot, whatever that was. That would never happen 20 years ago. It was amazing.
Ralph, it was Ryan Reynolds' company. It was Maximum Effort that worked with State Farm on the campaign that I was talking about.
There we go.
Yeah, but Ryan Reynolds is, again, like Taylor Swift is a unique example.
Right.
I mean, he buys something. He buys, you know, he bought what, like an alcohol company. It was basically gasoline from a car, and he sold it, you know, the next day.
But I don't think did he buy it, or did he just start taking it as a stock in it and in exchange for doing advertising?
Aviation gin? I don't know.
Yeah. I think just like, what's his name? Clooney, he took, as a way of endorsing it, he took in a percentage of the company, and that helped him sell it for, you know, $1 billion.
Was that how Ciroc was also launched like 15 years ago? Also, yeah, if I remember
they all
right.
did that. I know. So with the like with the vitamin
P.
water,
Diddy or Puff Daddy, whatever his name is now.
Yeah. But, why you sound so street?
Well, you know, one thing I was going to bring up is the fact that, you know, some of the sponsors that were sponsors of their podcasts, of Travis's podcast, have done an interesting job at actually kind of getting involved with the relationship, if you will, or kind of upping their game. And I did think that Fireball was pretty unique. One, they had their engagement has really gone up with their being involvement, which is terrific and not surprised. But I thought it was pretty interesting when they launched their own lipstick and they named it, I think, Cinnamon Delight. But it was, they made it be, I think even the price was $13.87. Like, they played into the whole relationship and having a little fun with being involved with the podcast. So I've actually been impressed with other non-sponsors that really have nothing to do with Taylor directly, who have kind of made some fun in getting involved in this conversation.
Yeah. I also, so Taylor has a huge amount of loyalty from her fans, but this is also the era of no brand loyalty. People move from one brand, from one TV network, from one car every couple of years. What can we learn from Taylor Swift about brand new loyalty?
I would say that it's not the era of no brand loyalty, but it's maybe more limited. You know, like, I will speak from the perspective of an admitted Gen Zer. I have some brand loyalties, you know, like, there are companies that I, very few, but that I will stick with. I will buy their product over a competitor, even if it's more expensive. And I think Taylor Swift is kind of a similar example where it's not once in a lifetime, but again, it comes down to like what she's offering, her product, I think that is kind of at the core of her fandom. It's not how she uses social. It's not her authenticity. It's not her relationships. Obviously, that play a part. But from the start, you know, she's had fans since she was however old, a teenager, decades ago, she's had fans. And it was because they like her product, which is her music. And that's something I think brands can keep in mind as well.
I remember interviewing the band Def Leppard 15 years ago, and they had just partnered with her to write a song together. And that's 15 years ago. It's
crazy. What was
the
song?
I don't remember the song, but it was they wrote a song together. And it was like, I was like, well, at the time, I was like, who the hell is Taylor Swift? I had no idea, but they liked her. And they, you know, at the time, she needed them more than they needed her. They just liked her. So her genuine talent has been there since the beginning. And that's a big difference. That's a big, big difference to what's going on here. She's genuinely talented.
If marketing strategies were a crystal ball, what future trends should marketers be preparing for right now?
Agility. I think you've got to be thinking about your team. How can you, you know, be thinking about pop culture and what's happening and reacting to that? So you're not just reacting, you're kind of even planning for it. So having those skills that you have a comfort in your team to be able to react quickly, I think is going to be important for the long term. Goes back to even to your mention of AI. You don't know quite what's going to happen. So you've got to be, you know, planning in advance for multiple things to potentially happen.
Honesty too, especially when we talk about AI. I think there's a world there where, you know, consumers are fine with brands and marketers using AI to generate their images or their copies as long as you disclose it. I think it's something we've hit on before, but yeah, you know, being honest with your consumers, I think, is something that people are coming to expect more and more.
And I think that the time of throwing a shitload of money at a celebrity just for endorsement isn't going to be there much longer unless there's some sort of genuine connection. I really believe that.
Or perceived connection.
Perceived connection. Yes, perceived connection.
So obviously Taylor Swift, she keeps her core identity, even with changing. She was a country singer originally, correct? Am I saying that?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So how do companies keep their core identity, but as Michelle mentioned, stay agile and nimble?
I think it just comes from creativity. I think there's a good answer to everything. You just may not see it. Like, look at what happened. I'll bring him up again with Ryan Reynolds. He took what looked like a disaster campaign and did it and to his own benefit, just creatively thinking outside the box. That's what I think is creative thinking is always going to be the answer. There's always an answer there. You just got to find it.
What's the future of brands in this world to be able to get both Gen Z and boomers?
Forgot about my generation? You don't care about Gen X anymore? That hurts.
I don't know what you identify as.
All right, I'm Gen X too. I'm with you, Ralph.
Thank you. We're the forgotten generation. Now. No one gives a crap about us.
When did Gen X start? Does anyone know?
I'm 54. I think I'm the early part of it, I think.
I think 62 is the start, because it's right after the boomers. I need to go back to my demographics charts where you got them in front of me. But yes, I think it's roughly then, but it's.
Well, boomers become, I think, a phrase that means anyone older than Gen Z, because I
think it just means anyone older than you, whoever you're talking to. If you're, it's not a finite answer. If you're 10, you could say it to a 15-year-old. You know what I mean? I just think it's just a way to make fun of someone older than you. That's all it is.
Have we learned the value of people over 23, over what, 28 years old, 29 years old from this?
Haven't they always been the golden goose for every marketing company in the world, is those 20-something-year-olds? I mean, that's what everybody wants.
People over 29 have always been seen. You know, it's what, 21 to 29, 32, 33. And now we're seeing like this cross-generational promotion. How can brands emulate that? How do they – that's my real question here is, how do brands market – okay, backing up, we always talk about targeting, especially in the online industry. We have to target this really niche brand. We have to target this niche, you know, 18 to 23 left-handed jugglers. And now we're saying that we can reach Gen Z and boomers and Gen X.
Well, I will tell you, I've always been a fan of psychographics, if you will, and versus demographics, because I think if you can find people who like things that your brand is interested in, you don't have to worry about their age. And I think you can connect with them more authentically. And so maybe that's semantics for some people, but I really think it makes more sense. Because if you are, for example, a mom who's, you know, has a new child who's, you know, and you're 36 and you're a mom who's a new child who's 26, you actually have a lot more in common than your generation than that, right? So I think thinking broader about people and their interests and it makes a ton of sense. And so I do think we're seeing more and more brands think that way versus just saying, I want the standard, you know, 24 to 35 audience. And I have been hearing more brands thinking about older audiences because as population slows, they need to. I mean, part of it is, you know, simple. They need to have those people involved with their brand and they're missing it because they're the ones who typically have more of the income.
Also, what's funny is when I watch the trajectory of music for a very long time, it used to just be grand categories of rock, dance, hip hop, whatever. Then there was this micro categorization. There actually is a genre of rock called Swedish pirate metal. It got so ridiculously granular, but in the past 5 years, I'm seeing bands and radio stations and channels starting to bring in different formats because nobody just likes one thing. And that's one thing I think that finally, like to Michelle's point, what are your interests versus your age group? What are your likes versus your dislikes? And that's going to be a far more reliable customer than, oh, just because he's a left-handed juggler. You know, that doesn't mean much in terms of what else is interests you unless you're looking to buy left-handed juggle balls. And then that's it.
I think it's also worth mentioning
I just wanted to say juggle balls.
Juggle balls. The people are left-handed. The balls are not.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the word juggle balls. That's all. I'm sorry.
It's worth mentioning the when we're talking about demographics, thinking about the demographic breakdown of the people who are consuming the content that you're advertising or promoting against. You know, when we talk about the Super Bowl and the NFL, it wasn't just Taylor Swift that brought women to that. You know, Super Bowl audience was almost half women before this year. And so I think hopefully that was a little bit of a wake up call to some of the advertisers to pay more attention, not make assumptions about the audience that you're reaching, especially when you're spending so much money. You should really be sure of that. Just feels worth, you know, discussing.
I think what Michelle said about psychographics is important. We spent a long time, and I come from the gaming industry, believing that gamers were all teenage caffeine addicted, you know, gamers. And it turns out that a large percentage of them were over 30-year-old mothers staying at home playing games, playing Fortnite, playing Call of Duty in the middle of the day. And it was actually a substantial percentage of the people who play those games. And I think having the psychographics is so much more important than these wide demographic beliefs, because they're just not true, especially in the diverse America that we are.
And also the question is, when you're doing marketing research, a lot of people are not willing to admit that they're a 30-year-old housewife that's playing Fortnite all the time. They're going to be like, no, I was doing laundry all day. So you can't rely on that all the time anyway. In the old radio days, all they used to track listenership through diaries. So people would write down they're listening to the news all day because they wanted to seem smart. And then when they started doing bio-tracking with these little people monitors, you started realizing, oh, no, it's music is much more popular than we realize. And these types of music people do much more because you can't trust people. So you got to go back to what people like, and that's all that matters.
So what can brands, if there's one thing, if one sentence that you could tell brands they should learn from Taylor Swift before we go, what is that?
Marry a famous football player. That's what they should.
Or at least date one.
Or at least date one.
So you'll tell Taco Bell to marry.
I'd say you got to be in love with your fans. Like, I think you got to lean in and love your fans. And because if you can continue to be that authentic self to them, they're going to continue to love you back. So I think there's.
And how do brands do that? How do brands show they love their fans?
Well, I think we've talked about a bunch of things, whether it's being authentic in social media. I think it's like sharing things about, you know, their product launches, taking their honest feedback to heart. I think there's a lot of ways. I'd say, you know, have a whole group of people design the product versus maybe old school and how we've done it. You know, I think there's many ways you can think about it, from the early development of your product to the actual marketing.
Alyssa?
Yeah, I think if I could wrap up what we've been talking about for brands in terms of lessons from Taylor and Travis, it would come down to be honest and have a good product. They're both really talented. The product is good. And it's all about their authenticity and their honesty. And brands can replicate that.
And the title of the episode should be Lessons from Taylor and Travis. I like that a lot.
Before we go, I'd like to ask everyone, if you could send yourself a text message back when you first started in your industry, what would you tell yourself? Start with Michelle.
I would say take risks. Be afraid to try things that you may not have done before, because they often turn out to have the best results.
Would you listen to yourself?
I think on Tuesdays, yes. On Wednesdays, I might forget it, but yes, I think I would do it, yeah.
Ralph?
How old of myself am I sending a message to? How long ago are we going back?
Oh, when did you start doing this? What you do? When did you start in?
In radio, I was 29. It's a long time ago. So,
so
if I'm going back that
yourself.
Far, I would say, I'm 54. Yeah. So I would say, don't throw out that USB thumb drive with all the Bitcoin. You'll regret it.
Alyssa, when you started, what are you like? I don't even know how old you are. So it's like 4 years ago when you started.
I'm 26. I started my first job in a professional newsroom at the Boston Globe when I was 18, though. So I've been at it for a little longer than
That's
most 26-year-olds. And
Congrats. Great,
due to
great
that,
place to start, Boston Globe.
It was.
What
yeah.
would you tell
Shout
yourself?
Shout out to BU. Yeah, given that, I would tell myself, take more time off or you'll burn out very quickly.
Oh, I like that.
And would you listen to yourself?
Probably not.
I mean, who would? You would automatically think it's fake. You know, I'm getting a message from 30 years in the future.
Well, that's our show, everyone. Thank you so much.
And that's all, folks. Thank you to Alyssa Myers, Ralph Sutton, and Michelle Harmon Manson. And special thanks to Troutman Amin LLP. Deserve to win when it matters most. Tomorrow we will have Jared Seigel, the founder of Attitude. Next week, Drew Stein of Audigent, the DOOH Roundtable, and Fred Godfrey from Origin. Reminder that sponsors keep independent and witty journalism alive.